This episode is brought to you by Entrust Data Card, now offering a webinar series on creating more secure online interactions with your citizens while broadening the range of services that you can offer using strong identity authentication and digital signing technologies. Learn more at entrustdatacard.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. I am excited to be joined today by Chuck DeWeese. Chuck is the Assistant Commissioner of the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles, and he is also currently the Chairman of the Governor's Highway Safety Association, GHSA, a very important partner association for us here at AMVA. And also, as I introduce Chuck, I will also mention that Chuck is one of our most recent recipients of the Lifetime Achievement Award in Highway Safety. So Chuck, welcome to the AMVAcast.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. And thank you, Ian, so much for having us. You know, GHSA has been a long-standing partner of AMVA, and we're thrilled to be able to participate in this cast today.
I appreciate that. Chuck, one of the reasons, I'm going to jump right into it. One of the reasons I really wanted to speak with you and connect with the GHSA community, so many of the conversations we've been having in the AMVA community around changes of behavior and operations related to the state of the pandemic we're in. There's also a lot of conversation going around in terms of how that's affecting behavior on our roads. And so I'm going to ask you first a very open-ended question, which is, what is GHSA seeing generally, you know, across the country in terms of driver behavior and traffic safety during these months of the pandemic?
Well, great question. Back in March and April, I kind of posed that question to our researchers myself to say, you know, what are we seeing on our roadways? And, you know, everybody had these stay-at-home orders. And, you know, I saw that vehicle miles traveled was down 50, 60, 70% in states across the country. And so great, you know, we're going to see a major reduction in traffic crashes and fatalities. And the data started coming in New York and other states, and that really wasn't the case. So We took a little deeper dive, and we noticed anecdotally, at least from the law enforcement community, that they noticed that speeds were way up on our highways. And we attributed that to the fact that there just weren't as many cars on the road, and it just was like a free pass to just go as fast as you want. And I'm not talking about, you know, 75, 80 miles an hour. I'm talking about 90, 100, 110 miles an hour. And we looked at some data and saw that I think 17% of the citations in a 2-month period this year of speeds in excess of 90 or 100 miles an hour were up about 16% from where they were last year. So, you know, that's what we saw first of all was speed. And then the National Safety Council has recently put out that, you know, although fatalities may be down in your state, and they are down in New York, but in other states they're going up. But what we're seeing is that the rate, the fatality rate, is going up month after month after month during the pandemic. So that's a major concern to the highway safety community. You know, we thought that we would see reductions, and we're seeing, you know, the opposite. The second thing that we're seeing, and it's probably no surprise to you, you've probably seen it in the news, you know, liquor stores were being hit like crazy. You know, everybody's drinking and buying lots of alcohol. And alcohol sales are way up. So whether it's you're trying to deal with the pandemic through substance abuse. So that's another concern to us is, you know, the folks that are, you know, drinking and driving and impaired driving. So we have our hands full, you know, just with those two issues. But then again, also, you know, if you're not driving and you want to get out of the house, there's more pedestrians, there's more bicyclists. So we're seeing an increase in pedestrians and bicyclists. And that's a concern too, because, you know, those are our most vulnerable road users, and those rates were going up prior to the pandemic. So we're just concerned that that's going to continue to increase.
And I imagine a lot, you know, it's funny you mentioned the pedestrians and the cyclists. There's a lot of that trend, especially early on. People took that up that hadn't done it before. So you not only had an increased volume, but you had pedestrians and cyclists who were far less experienced with sharing the road and knowing what precautions to take on their own.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that too, because, you know, I went to Dick's recently, and all the fishing equipment was gone, and the golf equipment. So there's only a few things you can do these days, and bicycles were being hit at these stores as well. So you're right. And one thing we're seeing is a huge rise in motorcycle fatalities. And I'm not sure, maybe some folks are going out and buying motorcycles that haven't ridden in 30, 40 years, and now they're going taking to the highways on motorcycles with high engine capacities. Mm-hmm. So our fatalities in New York with motorcycles have doubled this year from where they were last year. So it's a little too early to kind of, you know, find out exactly why we're seeing what we're seeing, but it's certainly cause for concern.
What's interesting about that is all those areas that are going up, as you say, speeding, impairment, vulnerable users, whether that's the motorcycle, the pedestrians, the cyclists, that's not a different story in the last decade of fighting traffic fatalities. Those are the same categories that we've been working on.
Yeah. Somebody once, I mean, I've been doing traffic safety for 30 years, and every time we start talking about a new topical area, my predecessors always remind me, Chuck, it's the deadly three. You know, it's speed, it's occupant protection, seatbelts, and impaired driving. And those three areas, you're right, have always been are the big three. You know, distracted driving has, you know, come to the forefront over the past few years as a major traffic safety concern. But it really still is those three things. But you're right, you know, pedestrian safety and cyclist safety is clearly been on our radar in the state of New York. I think the Federal Highway Administration and NHTSA now are really taking a deeper dive into pedestrian safety, because we're seeing these rates increase across the whole United States. So, you know, like I said, we have our hands full. The other thing I was just going to mention is, you know, who's driving right now? You think about it, are riskier drivers on our roadways? And I say that, or inexperienced drivers. You look at kids in high school, well, they weren't in class, right? So where are they? Well, they're driving around. So there are inexperienced drivers that are on the roadways, and maybe the riskier drivers, the ones that, you know, don't think you should wear a mask or think the pandemic is a hoax, are they the ones out on our roadways, you know, causing more of the crashes? It's an interesting and fascinating topic to discuss.
So that, you know, that's interesting about the attitude of taking a risk. And certainly early on, when many, many places were under full stay-at-home orders, and you're wondering, you know, well, who's out on the road might fall into that risk profile. It kind of leads into that whole idea of those attitudes and behaviors and safety culture, which has become a, you know, huge topic in recent years. And I'm curious if you and your colleagues at GHSA are seeing any parallels and correlation around how do we attack this conversation around safety culture, behaviors, attitudes towards acting responsibly on the roads, and just exactly what you were getting at, which is how do I act responsibly in this era of a pandemic? How do I make a personal decision about a mask, social distancing, sanitizing, whatever that is, and those correlations of asking people to make that personal choice as it relates to their impacts to a broader community?
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. It's, I mean, our whole world is about behavioral change, you know, and in the highway safety community, for the highway safety offices, we have two mechanisms to try to fix that: education and enforcement, right? And enforcement, obviously, nothing changes behavior quite like, you know, seeing the red lights behind you when you're speeding to change your behavior a little bit. And, you know, good traffic enforcement is a key to anything we do moving forward. And there's a lot of, you know, angst right now in the law enforcement community with, you know, enforcement was down a little bit during the pandemic. Law enforcement officers didn't know, you know, were they going to be safe pulling somebody over and interacting with a motorist? And then you see everything going on with the protests. There's a lot of resources that have been taken from law enforcement. But the other piece is the education. And, you know, 94% of crashes are behavior related, right? It's you know, autonomous vehicles will be wonderful when they all come to fruition, because we can take that piece out of it. But it's changing behavior. And what I find the hardest thing to do is everybody is educated in a different way, right? So if you're talking to teens, you might not, you know, blood, guts, and gore type PSAs might not be the way to change their behavior, but that might impact somebody over 50 or 60. But every segment of the population is educated differently. So our hands are tied kind of because we're always trying to reach everybody. Our demographic, obviously, is the 18 to 34 age group where most of the crashes occur. But yeah, you're right. It's very difficult to try to change behavior. And I just wish that the motoring public would understand that what we're trying to do is save lives, right? We're trying to save lives. We did a PSA or a social media post today. We're starting a two-week speed enforcement campaign. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the comments on social media were, you know, how long before you drive us all out of the state? It's just about revenue generation. Mm. And it's really not. It's about trying to save lives. And we lose, you know, 30 to 40,000 people a year on our highways. And that's, you think about that, it's like the equivalent of a plane going down, you know, every couple of days in the United States. And so it is tough trying to get people to understand that what we're doing is not for revenue generation. It's to save lives. And those who have been impacted by motor vehicle crashes know this better than anybody. They get it. They understand why we're doing this. And it's a matter of time before everybody can understand why we're doing it. It's to save lives.
Absolutely. And I guess, though, the question becomes on that education piece, do we have to start thinking about changing some of that strategy to cut through the clutter? You talk about 30 to 40,000 lives every year, and we're seeing now, sadly, that number pales into comparison in what's happening with the pandemic, and yet the same education and communication struggle is occurring to change behavior. And so is there any conversation, or is it a conversation we need to start shifting how we educate or shifting how we enforce, to your point about, you know, whether for lots of different reasons, enforcement may be down or may be having to shift their approach? Does it take some of those usual tried and true countermeasures out of the list of what we could do, at least on a short-term basis?
Boy, great question. You know, maybe we are at a pivot point in this country on trying to change behavior. You know, I always say that stick with what's always worked, right? You know, we know the countermeasures that we've had in place for years work. They've brought our numbers down significantly. I just wonder, are we just hitting on the fringes now? You know, are we going to go from, you know, New York has approximately 1,000 fatalities a year. Are we going to go to 980 or 970? And, you know, what can we do to get to, you know, 600, 500, 400, get down to that zero mark? And I really think that we need to continue doing what we've always done, but we need to keep pushing the envelope in terms of technology. Look at the advances we've made already in this with cars and the safety mm-hmm. features in vehicles. And, you know, the DADS technology that's out there that won't allow you to start your vehicle if your BAC is, you know, above a certain set point, that when you push the button to start your car, the car will know instantaneously that your BAC is above a certain limit. And maybe we can get that to even read if you're impaired by drugs. So that would take 12,000 fatalities off our nation's highways with technology. You know, automation, you guys at AMBA know better than anybody the value that presents itself with automated vehicles. I think that, you know, automated enforcement, that's another sticky topic, mm-hmm. right? You see the communities that have implemented it. Some have done it extremely successful. They take the money and they put it back into safety programs. But in other communities, it's viewed as just a revenue generator. Right. But we're starting it slowly in different areas and school zones, because I think everybody can get on board with having automated speed enforcement in school zones. But really, how do you slow people down? There's not enough law enforcement out there to do speed enforcement on a daily basis. But can you imagine if you had automated enforcement throughout the country, and you know that you're going to get your license picture taken if you're speeding? It would slow people down. So I guess your question is good. You know, do we need to look at the way we educate and try to change behavior? Absolutely, I think we do. I wish I had the answer to that and what the silver bullet was, But I think we need to continue doing what we've always done and then just really try to rely on some of the new technology that's coming to the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more on the new technology part for sure. And if you look at whether it's the Road to Zero Coalition or the Towards Zero Deaths national strategy, a lot of that is reinforced with really not only investing, but accelerating the deployment. I think that's the key. A lot of those innovations are out there. It's really just figuring out how do you accelerate the deployment into the fleet so that more people can benefit from that technology. Not only the new technology like automation that's coming, but there's so much that is available and built now, if we could only get it out into more hands, would really help move that needle.
Yeah. And you know, ANVA plays a very important role in that as well. In educating, you know, with car dealers, you know, you go buy a new car today. They don't want to spend an hour sitting with you talking about the new car features. Right. And you get some employees, when I just bought a car last year, you know, they put a 17-year-old kid in the car with me and he tried to walk through in 5 minutes all the features of the vehicle. Right. And my head was spinning about all the features. But you really need to, you know, some people are turning these features off, yes, which is bad as well. But, you know, we're going to have a long, long period where we're going to have to integrate, you know, autonomous type technology with, you know, your 1995 Honda Accord that doesn't have any automation on it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I can tell you that my 81-year-old mother is not going to be, you know, ready to jump into an autonomous vehicle. So the State Highway Safety Office is in partnership with ANVA and others are going to have a real test to try to educate the motoring public on some of this stuff.
Yeah. And yet it's that your 81-year-old mother, as an example, that could probably the most benefit from some of that automation to, you know, keep her mobility longer and later into life and fight what, you know, might stereotypically be some of the skill loss that comes with maturity.
Absolutely. I mean, just watch my mother try to back out of the driveway. You know, she can barely turn her head. So now you have backup cameras, which really help. And, you know, the blind spot monitoring. So you can't turn your head as easily on the highway. At least you'll have a indication that there's a vehicle next to you. So yes, there is a lot out there that this age group can really benefit from. I agree.
Chuck, you mentioned earlier, you've been in the safety business for well over three decades now. I know most recently, the last about a dozen years or so, you've been at the New York DMV. As the governor's highway safety rep and the governor's highway safety office sitting within the New York DMV, that is not necessarily a universal model. It varies throughout states. I think maybe about a third is where the governor highway safety office sits in the DMV, as in your case, and then there's different variations. Talk to me what you've observed or seen in terms of how you're able to leverage being intimately connected to the DMV and the highway safety office sitting in that structure.
Yeah, so you're correct. I would say, you know, maybe a third are in DMVs, another third are in DOTs, and maybe another third are in highway patrols. And it really doesn't matter from NHTSA's perspective, you know, where the office is housed. But I can tell you that I've been blessed to be in the DMV because there's such an integration between what DMV works on and what the Highway Safety Office works on. You know Terry Egan, the executive deputy commissioner at the Motor Absolutely. Vehicle Department and on your board, was my boss for the first, directly my boss for the first 10 years, very passionate with highway safety. And, you know, we always had conversations that, you know, highway safety is one of the pillars, one of the strategic goals for the New York Department of Motor Vehicles. So I feel blessed to be in a DMV because there's such a connection. We talk about driver behavior. Driver behavior causes 94% of the crashes. And the DMVs see every single one of those people, right? You know, they got to come in to get their license and their titles and their registrations. So I've been blessed to be in the DMV for the past, it's going on 13 years now. When I came into the position, I knew very little about the Department of Motor Vehicles other than that's where you go to get your license. The DMVs have a lot on their plates. You know, there's so much that they are responsible for, but I think they all do a very good job. And clearly, you know, there's such a benefit to be a member of GHSA, and such a benefit to be a member of AMVA. Those two associations together, if you're not part of these associations, well, you're really missing the boat, because the resources that both AMVA and GHSA put out to their members are phenomenal, whether it's autonomous vehicle type publications on what you should be looking for, publications on impaired driving, pedestrian safety, all those different issues. And there's so many resources that you can benefit from. But yeah, clearly I've been blessed to be part of a DMV.
That's really great. Yeah, Terry is a rock star for sure. We're so fortunate that she's so engaged in our board and what we do. And yeah, we've really enjoyed for many years our collaboration with GHSA. Your predecessor as chair of GHSA, Darren Grondell, was a well-known figure in the AMVA community. And we have a wonderful relationship with the staff at GHSA, led by Jonathan and everyone else over there. It's just a really great collaboration and overlap, even when, as you say, only about a third are actually in the DMVs. So yeah. Hopefully that's going to continue. And as before your 13 years at the DMV, you were with the federal government.
Yeah, so I started my career with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. As a matter of fact, FMCSA wasn't even formed yet. It was Federal Highway Administration, the Office of Motor Carriers, if you want to go that far back. And you know, the regulation of the commercial motor vehicle industry, which is the lifeblood of our country. You know, if you want to shut things down, have truckers park their trucks for a few days, especially during a pandemic. But
yeah.
You know, commercial motor vehicle safety is an area that even the highway safety offices get involved with. Sometimes people think, oh, that's a DOT function or the state police function to regulate those operators. But listen, mm-hmm. whether you're driving a car or an 18-wheeler, you still have issues of impaired driving. You have issues with distracted driving. And we do a lot in New York to try to educate law enforcement officers to just don't be afraid to pull over a truck. If they're speeding, if they're driving erratically, because it's a highway safety issue.
Right.
But a lot of officers, you know, listen, police have to know everything, right? They have to be experts in every different field. So we try to just give them just enough that they feel comfortable pulling over a truck, if they're speeding, if they're driving distracted, if they seem to be impaired, so that they have that comfort level when they do their traffic enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely. Encouraging those non-MCSAP trained officers to go ahead and do that enforcement. That's probably a whole nother conversation and a podcast in and of itself for another day. We can unpack that. Well, Chuck, I really want to thank you for taking some time out of your day today to chat with us and give us your thoughts on what you're seeing in the highway safety universe as it relates to this unusual time. I do hope that we all continue to work together to make progress and to drive down that number to zero, because I think we all agree that is really the only acceptable number of fatalities on our roadways. So thanks for taking the time to be with us, Chuck. I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. Chuck, hopefully we'll see you again out on the AMVA or GHSA circuit.
Thank you so much, Ian. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we just value our partnership with AMVA and all your members. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for AMVAcast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode has been brought to you by Entrust Data Card. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.